G'day everyone, we're here to have fun. It's Screenplay Sunday. We've got the normal random gronks, and today we're joined by Dan Illick from Irrational Fear and Riot Act.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's good to be here. It's good to be with you. Good to be spending my Sunday reading a great bit of literature that will enter the canon of fantastic Australian works, right up there with Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Picnic at Hanging Rock, and BMX Bandits. Can't wait to read it.
Thank you. Well, Dan, that's very kind. When was the last time you had a table read?
Last time I had a table read was not that long ago, actually. I've been... we've been taking Riot Act, which is the sitcom that we wrote for Audible, and have been trying to turn it into a pilot for television. So we've been doing a little bit of table reads of our existing work and punishing ourselves for how terrible it is, and trying to turn it into something a bit more interesting for television, which is great.
And so there is, like with Riot Act, that was one of the first podcasts I listened to that had sort of that radio play vibe. What's the difference from an energy perspective, doing sort of a radio play versus a sit down sort of table read?
It's interesting. It's hard. I haven't done a table read with everybody reading all the characters. It's just table read between the writers. But the difference in energy is, I feel like there's probably a bit more energy when you're doing something for radio, because you need to kind of express every single emotion through your voice rather than use your face to do it. So I feel like there's a significant difference in that regard, because on television and screen in general, the performances have to be a lot smaller, because if you put a big performance on television, it just gets lost and the audience hates it. On stage, you know, you kind of have these gigantic movements and have gigantic gestures. On television, the movements and gestures get a lot smaller. And then on film, because the screen is so big, the way to act really well on film is to not do any acting at all, to do nothing, basically. And you can win awards doing that. There's been many actors have won awards for doing absolutely nothing. So that's the secret. So it's a huge difference in kind of performance style. So we're really focused on jokes and energy and visuals and stuff like that for the pilot.
Well, so Georgie Boy and I have been we've sort of given ourselves the task of writing the script. But GB, can you give an update on what happened earlier today?
Yeah. So just before we started recording, we gave ourselves about 45 minutes to write the next bit. It was actually meant to be Josh's week this week, but he said, let's do it together. And to be fair, Josh did all the work. I was just sort of sitting there anyway. But but when we were getting pretty close to the end, it crashed and we lost
your final draft.
Everything.
Final draft crash and we had the spinning wheel of death. However, the good news is that one of our listeners, Whitey, had sent through an email with a script that he had written with all of the characters. that doesn't sound promising, Dan. How do you feel about having?
Oh no, I think that's great. I'm all for collaboration. It's really good. You know, I will say this about Final Draft: it is a dog of a program. It constantly crashes. I don't understand how it's gotten the reach that it has. No one should ever use a Final Draft. Only use Write a Duet. There you go.
Really, Write a Duet. Okay, Duet. Well, I've just paid for the subscription. I've paid for the license.
Well, because another thing about Final Draft that is terrible, that it's not cloud based and you can't. You can't see your changes immediately.
Oh, Write a Duet is cloud based.
Write a Duet is the Google Docs of screenwriting.
It looks great as well. I'm just looking at the UI right now. It looks stunning.
Okay. Does it cost?
Look, rookie mistake. I know you guys are just starting out in the business.
No, well, seriously, I mean, I've written more for Screenplay Sunday than I have for the rest of in any part of my life, and I've only written 5 pages. So that should give you an idea.
That's good. That's really good.
And so you asked before we started recording, can you guys give us an update? GB, we had Hamish Blake last week, and he mentioned the idea of a trailer or something sort of like, you know, as previously on.
just to give the guests a bit of context of what's going on. So, yeah, I've done it. I've done a trailer for you, Dan. So it should be pretty – it should explain it pretty well, I reckon. And if you're more confused afterwards, then sorry about that.
Okay, so here we go. So this is as previously on.
Would you like a trailer? Like if GB edited up like a 30-second bit where it cuts dialogue and things like that?
It will be tricky giving GB a lot of work, but try it.
You got it, Haim. Here we go. A 30-second recap starting now.
Previously on Screenplay Sunday. Dale, played by Ryan Shelton, was keeping a secret from his wife Wendy, played by Tony Lodge.
I bought a jet ski. Sea-Doo, GTI.
Dale, if you don't explain what's going on, I'm gonna lose my shit.
Oh, I haven't been completely honest with you. My tax return this year is well over $1,700.
Baz, the shopkeeper, played by Josh, sold Simon a winning lottery ticket.
Yeah, boy!
But we soon found out it was a mistake.
I confused the ticket Dale gave me with the one George gave me.
Then we went back to 2010 when Dale took his girlfriend Wendy on a birdwatching adventure.
This is it.
But there was a surprise.
Wendy Smith, will you marry me?
Of course, yes!
All right.
So that's basically it. Dale got a big tax return, bought a jet ski, won $60 million. Then we went back in time and saw how he proposed to Wendy. Oh, and Dale also bought tickets to Antarctica. Over to you, Josh. That was 30 seconds on the dot.
There you go.
Sorry about
that. So good.
Fantastic. Yeah. And that is brilliant. Thank you so much. I'm all caught up.
Makes sense. Could it be more clear?
Couldn't be more clear. Okay, Dan. All right. Yeah, you're sounding like Dan Andrews there. Okay, so...
That was the gag.
So I think the problem we're having, gag? Dan...
Yeah.
Oh, I love these Victorian memes. These Victorian memes that really travel well outside of Victoria. Couldn't be more clear. I'm adding that to my Victorian meme list.
It's very funny. How am I the only one that missed that? As a joke.
It was pretty clear, Josh. You couldn't be more clear.
Okay, all right.
I couldn't be more clear.
You're right. Okay.
All right. So,
can I say that the problem that we're having, Dan, is that we were writing one each, and I think when it's your turn to write, you want to have as many twists and turns in your five pages, even though at the end this is going to be a feature film, so it's a bit all over the shop. I apologise for last week. There was lots going
on. And is BMC going to make this into a feature film, Josh?
Well, I think that was the plan. But look, it's not great so far. I'm having fun, which is the main thing. Like what we're trying to do is have fun here.
I know.
But and also just like no offence to Whitey. Like you know, we love our listeners and Whitey. No, but I haven't looked at it yet. But it's just very hard.
Watched the masterclass,
yeah, exactly. You know, if you haven't watched the Aaron Sorkin thing, have you watched the Aaron Sorkin masterclass?
Here's what I bought it about 2 years ago, and I haven't watched it yet. So somewhere,
but you don't
I
have to watch ability, it. Sorry. You have
I
to be
have
fired.
The ability to watch it. Yeah, I bought it. Yeah. I did my part. I did my part in capitalism and bought it. Yeah.
That's a Josh Jansen watch.
It was more of a signifier of my hopes and dreams than anything.
How many of the subscriptions I'm thinking now that is exactly what I'm doing too. But okay, so yep. GB, we've got the script. Have you sent it around to everyone?
Oh, no, I thought you were doing that. Was I meant to do that?
Okay, so Dan's got it. Dan's got the script. Right,
I'll send it to the producers.
So you'll send it to the producers?
Okay, great.
While we wait, maybe I can give you my facts for the day.
Oh, yeah, so this is the idea that where GB will bring an industry fact just to give it some sort of clout. Go, GB, what do you got?
It's hard to multitask. So happy birthday to Bo Brady. If you know Bo Brady. Really?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, we're in the same drama class in high school.
Wow. So happy birthday. Really? Age 39. Happy birthday to him. Yeah, he's known for Home and Away and
Any other of Dan's mates?
And
I think you'll think of him fine. He was also known for How the West Was Warped in Year 7 at Oakhill College. I don't know. You might want to do your facts there, GB, and do a bit more research. He's also known for DJing shirtless at Home Nightclub in Sydney, probably in 1998. So, you know, some other things that he's well known for. So, get onto it.
That wasn't on, it's not on the wiki. So,
yeah. What else have you got, GB?
Add it to.
In 1939, there's a divorce of interest. Actor Jackie Coogan divorced actress Betty Grable after 2 years of marriage. So this is on thisday.com/film/TV. There's a section that's called Divorce of Interest, and you can see who got divorced on that day. So is it interesting? It's not really, is it?
Probably the divorce of interest is the most interesting thing about that. Like knowing that there's a website we can look up for divorces of interest. That's a tool we can all take into our future. Thank you, TV.
Yeah. I mean, it's like one of those net worth sites, isn't it? Have you ever looked at yourself, Dan? Are you on any net worth sites?
Yeah, I think I'm worth about $26 million, according to the net worth site. So maybe we can talk about funding this screenplay a little bit later.
Yeah. Great.
Okay, right, so
I'll send that to you guys. Can you send it to Grace, Mace?
Sent.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, so what has tripped us up previously has been the, what would you describe?
Oh, gosh.
There were some issues with like putting the characters and everyone together. I'm not going to bring it up again, Jess. It doesn't matter which episode it was. It's behind us. It was episode 2. GB, do you know who's playing what character?
No, I haven't even looked at the
character. Oh, no. Okay.
This episode is far worse than mine, just everyone's aware.
Okay, so, no. Dan, you're playing Dale.
Yeah.
Okay, and I gather Dale is like a British Cockney guy.
Yes, he is.
Right.
Wendy.
Grace.
Yeah, I think that's
Grace.
It's Grace. Who else have we got, Jimmy?
Okay.
I'll be the craps dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Samantha is Jess.
Mm-hmm.
And Gerald is Sevs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And seeing as the craps dealer doesn't have much, I know he's got a bit down the bottom.
I'll be Simon.
Oh, is there Simon?
Yeah, there's Simon. There.
Yeah, we haven't done you yet. Okay, you're Simon, and you can read the big print, Josh.
Oh, me? Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you're too nervous about it.
No, I'll give it a go. I'm just writing down Simon so I remember who I am.
Who am I, George? Sorry?
You're Gerald.
Gerald. Okay, great. Gerald.
Okay. I'm the craps dealer. Samantha is Jess.
And Wendy. Samantha is Jess.
And so, Wendy is Grace. Yeah.
Grace.
Wendy's Grace.
Okay.
Dale is...
And Josh, you are...
Dan. And I am Simon.
Simon, okay.
Okay. And so
well done, Whitey, including all the characters.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. He's done well so far. And so what are you laughing at, Jess?
Are you just reading it?
A paragraph of the script.
Okay, all right. Here we go. I haven't... So the deal is we don't read it beforehand.
I know.
And so it is. So hopefully he hasn't stitched us up here. But it's a new
anyone
life...
Has anyone sense checked this?
No. A New Life for Dale, written by Andrew White, derived from Screenplay Sunday, Big Media Company. All rights for this work and any derivations assigned. Unequivocally to Big Media. Oh, this is a fucking nightmare. Okay.
I didn't sign up to giving all these rights away. I can't possibly.
Yeah. I'm not even comfortable with it, to be honest. All right.
Well, what if Dan reads the big print?
You've already called it out that I'm just too terrible for it. Is that what's happened?
The word is unequivocally.
Like it's a difficult word.
Unequivocally.
No?
Yeah. It's okay. All right.
By the way, Dan, Dale has previously been known to be British.
British, yeah. He's already been through that.
We've been through this, I think.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but he's Cockney or he's from London or something?
He is Cockney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Like low class British or high class British. What class are we talking about?
No, he's been Scottish. He's been Irish. Maybe he could be Welsh. American. That'd be good.
I think he was Canadian at the point. Okay.
Take it away.
Am I doing the big print?
Okay, yep.
we yeah, can if you want. Print. Okay, here we go. This is like SOS all over again. Okay. Interior, suburban home, kitchen, night. The camera pans through the filthy but large and expensive looking kitchen, showing a thunderstorm raging through the window, continuing to pan into a interior, long hallway, night. A pile of clothes are strewn in a line towards the bedroom door, including a crumpled hot dog costume. Lightning flashes. Exterior, suburban home, front door. Dale is unlocking the front door. A clap of thunder comes over as he opens the sturdy oak door. He drops his keys on the table inside the door, next to the vase of peonies, and walks down the same hallway we saw before. Opening the bedroom door, we see the shock on his face as he yells,
"Wendy, what are you? Samantha? Oh, God!"
Cut to interior, dark room. The camera is zoomed in on a man's hand holding a smoking cigarette. It follows it up to his face and he takes a puff and says,
"I'm not surprised Wendy did it. Since the lottery win last year, Samantha and her have become so close friends. How close? I didn't even realise it. Still, I didn't think they were that close. I guess this whole thing really started off to the steamboat. On the steamboat, rather."
Exterior, steamboat on a river, day. An aerial shot shows a beautiful steamboat paddling along a wide river. Patrons of the boat can be seen dancing and drinking along the decks as 1930s swing music can be heard playing over the noise of the crowd. Cut to interior, steamboat on river, day. Dale is seen in a dashing ruffled shirt and a tailcoat, dressed to the nines, a la Mel Gibson in Maverick, leaning over a craps table. Wendy Hands stands at his side with an excited look on her face, wearing an Emeleth? What is that word?
I don't know what that is.
Style dress, complete with a golden necklace. A crowd is gathered around.
"Come on, baby, you've got this. Roll those sevens for me."
Dale rolls the dice down the table.
"Snake eyes, house wins."
"Ha ha! Oh, well, that's another 10 foul between... What's another 10 foul between friends? Waiter, another cognac for me and my best girl. Make it the top shelf stuff this time. Got it?"
Samantha waltzes into shot wearing a hot dog costume with a gold-plated bun and silver jewellery in the shape of various condiments.
"Wendy, baby, Dale, come see this band. They're fantastic. And I was chatting to the singer before. Gerald, what a hunk."
The trio wander away from the table and over to a large stage in the corner of the room. This is where the swing music has been coming from. Gerald, a former busker, is crooning into the microphone, crooning into the microphone as the band plays. The song finishes.
"Okay, ladies and ludies, we'll be taking a short break. I'll see you cool cats and dirty dogs on the other side of the bar. Don't forget to tip your bartenders."
Gerald walks off the stage and spots Samantha.
"Hey, hot dog, how are your buns hanging?"
"Hey, Gerald, it's nice to catch up with you again."
"Good. You two are on a roll."
"Yeah, condiments."
Everyone stares at Dale for a few seconds.
"Gerald, this is Dale and Wendy, friends of mine.
Come on, gang, let's go back to the craps."
The group wander over to a craps table and find a waiter waiting with their cognac. Cognac. Mm-hmm. Everyone but Gerald looks reasonably drunk.
"All right, mate, let's put these ones on red."
"Wow, that's a lot of money."
Don't worry, mate. There's plenty where that came from.
I'll be right back. I just need to use the little dog's room.
I miss you already, babe.
Dale, mate. You know those are black chips, not the brown ones, right?
Suddenly, the crap stealer jumps up and grabs Wendy, holding a revolver in her hand, to her head.
What that?
Well, hello again, Dale. It's great to see you again.
Hello, Jimmy.
What? Oh, no. You don't recognise me, Dale?
No, sorry, mate. Should I? What's going on here?
What about...
He rips off his face moustache.
What about now?
Dale pauses for a moment and squints at the man who is clearly in pain as the fake moustache has left a red line where the glue was.
No, mate, sorry. Can't say I don't know. Can't say I know you at all.
Damn it, man. It's me. It's Simon.
Simon! Not ringing any bells, mate. Wendy, do you know?
No, it doesn't ring a bell. Wait, are you in my Pilates class?
Now, is this me or you, Josh? Because I'm Simon now. But we,
George, just go with it, mate.
Go with it, it's fine.
I'll be Simon. Yeah, picking it up now. Damn it, no, it's me, Simon, from the news agency.
Oh, Simon. Hi, mate. Yeah. How you going? You doing all right? What's going on there?
I remember.
Yeah.
Not very well, actually, Dale. not well at all. But things will be going well soon. Now I have you and Wendy right here, right where I want. Picking it up. So pick that up there. Now I have you and Wendy right where I want you, and soon I'll be.
Suddenly, Simon falls to the floor, stunned, leaving Samantha standing behind him, giant hot dog on necklace gripped in her hand. She has evidently just belted him from behind with it on her way back from the bathroom.
Frankly, you're just the worst.
Samantha leans down and offers Wendy her hand.
Are you okay, babe? Oh, I am now. I thought I was cooked.
And from that moment, they were inseparable. It's been 3 months and you've never seen them apart. However, I never expected this.
Cut to interior, suburban home, bedroom, night. We continue the shot from scene one, pivoting around from Dale's face to a well-lit room. Wendy and Samantha are in old T-shirts and overalls and have clearly just finished painting a sign saying, "It's a girl." Wendy runs over and hugs Dale.
I couldn't believe it. They'd been working on that banner to surprise me. And I've never been so happy. Filthy habit, this. But I've promised Wendy I'll kick it before the little one comes along. Who needs the money when you have family? Although, I wish I'd been able to buy that jet ski I wanted.
Well done, Whitey.
That was so
that was good.
Standout performance, Dan. Accent was very good. I think Whitey did an amazing job.
I think that was the best script we've had. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Words I didn't even know.
Really good.
That's how good it was. I reckon a testament to a good script is...
Word of the week.
Yeah, so what do you do, Dan? What do you do? I mean, this might not happen to you because you're a smart dude. You have a great vocab. If you get stuck on a word when you're in a high-pressure situation like a table read or any public situation, what should you do?
You know what? Just say, what is that word? And then move on.
Sure.
No, that's fine. That's mm-hmm. totally fine. Or make it up, like unequivocally. unequivocally there looks pretty good. I mean, you could pronounce it any way you want. You could be unequivocally. You know, that's great. You know, that's good too. Yeah, it means the same thing. Yeah, and just say it. Look, sorry. I don't know these Japanese words.
English, please.
English, please.
Any
or
feedback?
Just say sorry. Just say sorry. English is my second language and move on briskly.
Actually, that's a good
and
idea.
People will be very impressed. They'll be like, "Wow, English is your second language." You can get in trouble though, because if you have a big long word like entrepreneur and you fuck it up and you say, "Well, sorry, French was my first language," that is a French word. So you don't want to get caught there. Mm-hmm.
This is episode 4. Yeah. We get a bit meta feedback on the format. I feel like we've gone very big when it comes to the narratives. It's getting very unwieldy, very hard to control. What's your thoughts? If you were to leave, rather than leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, can you just give us the review of the show? Just something here. We can transcribe. I can write it out.
I think here is much safer for your SEO to give it a review. I would say maybe we have experienced something of a narrative within these few minutes, but what people want to know is what's coming down the line. And I think, I think there could be something where within this group you all can brainstorm a signpost or a flag that might be coming down the line for next week's Sunday screenplay, or have something for the audience to look forward to tide them over. Or even have a narrative session where you can break down the narrative how many weeks you're going to do this. I don't know, 20 weeks or something like that, whatever that might be, and say, we've had a narrative session and here are the 20 chapters we want to write. And then you could farm out people like Andrew to write one or two of them within the narrative structure. So say, you know, here's our four characters and kind of have those blocks laid out and then kind of have a bit of a writing workshop with your wonderful listeners.
I love that idea. I mean, I've always dreamt of being in a writer's room. If we wanted to create our own writer's room, what do we need?
You need collaboration. That's it. You know, get yourself,
I've got index cards. Is that close enough?
Oh, yes. The index cards from overseas.
Yeah,
the
I've got a lot of the index cards. You got any? What are you rocking? He's just getting his injection. Yeah, great. No, beautiful.
These are lined. Sadly, these are lined. These aren't yours.
Well, you can do both. We've got sort of lined and sort of...
Only come in one colour and they're very standard from Officeworks. So.
No, that's fine. I mean, you don't have to have them.
Do you have a corkboard?
Yeah, have you got a corkboard?
I don't have a corkboard. I've got terrible sound baffling from Amazon.
Okay. Well, no, I think that's it. How's everyone feeling? Have you had really good fun, GB?
I had a great time. Would have liked more lines, but really happy with that.
Well, you took my lines.
And you took Josh's.
That's true. That's true. That was... I loved the scene, like the setting in the casino or wherever it was.
Had really good jokes. I really liked this had a lot of good jokes in it. I particularly enjoyed the reveal of the mustache. Well, what about now? And everybody go, I still don't know who you are, mate. Sorry. That's a really good joke. Really,
do you know, like, the thing that's surprising for me, it probably not surprising to anyone else, but the I didn't know it was called craps. I thought I've been calling it crabs for many years. so that's another fun little...
No, crabs is a separate part of the casino. generally upstairs. That's where you get. That's where you play crabs.
Well, we the script that GB and I had written that never made it today was set in a bowling alley, and not to bore you on what happened, but it was interesting. GB, don't you think there were similarities? The hot dog seems to be coming back every time, because on EP1, Jess was dressed as a hot dog. And so for whatever reason, that's just made its way through.
Our script was very heavily hot dog based. Lots of references.
Same jokes.
We did call them little boys as well, because that is sort of the, I remember as a kid, it's like, that's what they were called.
Like footy franks,
like little frank, cocktail frankfurts, that type of thing.
So just on the story, so he thought that... Dale thought that he was getting cheated on at the start, right?
Yes.
Is that what it was?
I thought we were turning lesbian, Grace.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah.
I missed something. I still thought they were, and I thought that Dale's just...
had a baby with
him. Yeah, I thought he was. Yeah, I thought that's what was happening. So you think
I think they're just really close friends, and then Samantha went over to help Wendy surprise Dale.
Okay.
Is that what everyone else?
It was a baby gender reveal.
Yeah, it was a baby reveal.
Yeah.
Wendy just asked for her best friend's help.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Dan, you're the only person here that's not in Melbourne right now. Can you tell us something exciting? Like, what are you doing?
Oh, it is. I can't express the joy of going through toll roads, guys. I don't know. You probably haven't gone through a toll road in a while, but your little beeper goes beep. It's very exciting. That's something that happens 5 kilometres away from my house. I thought I'd just share that with you. There's nothing like spending $20 in tolls to go see your parents. That is the absolute thrill that awaits you outside of lockdown.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that's exciting. And before we go, now this is slightly controversial, but I'm going to bring it up and then maybe we can have some closure to it. Did you have any involvement in the Don't Start a Podcast skit that was on ABC on the show that you worked on?
Yeah, so that was a sketch that came from our team, and I was the boss of the TV show at the time, and we just made it. Yeah, so okay. Yeah.
Because I did have a slight blow up on the podcast.
I heard that too. I was
a bit upset. Do you think we're when things like this happen, what's the are we taking ourselves too seriously, do you think? What's the internal conversation that you're having with something like that?
I don't know, like, do we you know, we had a lot of people on there that have their own podcasts making fun of people with podcasts, and I think that was totally, you know, I think that was part of it. Of course, it was a joke, so to use the Donald Trump defense, it was sarcasm, you know, unlike telling you to inject bleach from the White House podium, this was actually sarcasm used within the context of a comedy show. If you didn't enjoy the sarcasm with inside a comedy show, you might not enjoy sarcasm outside comedy shows. So.
Do you think it plays into, like, so the one thing with this type of thing is it's like, I didn't see it within the context of the show. So you see it and about and things like that. Do you think that's consideration?
When you see it... Yeah, no, that's a really good point. When you see a video like that tweeted from the ABC account, it's like, oh, this is an important announcement for the ABC. But when it's inside a comedy show, when it's all about the pandemic, it kind of makes sense inside the comedy show.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, when sketches do kind of lose their context. Then people can take it a different way, and that's fine. Like, you know, if you acknowledge that it's a comedy sketch, then you might have more fun enjoying it. I mean, I make my living doing a podcast now, so no, it's not like I commissioned the script, so it's fine.
And so, how's Irrational Fear going? Your podcast?
Oh, Irrational Fear is going great. We just since we moved to Wooshka, we've just done 101,000 listens, which is huge for us, I think. We're cracking about 2,700 a week, which is awesome, which is I'm really thrilled about. And Josh, you've been a fantastic mentor in terms of understanding numbers and data and stuff for the show, so that's been really wonderful. And we just put out a great episode today with Mike Cannon-Brooks and Osher Gunsberg talking about climate crisis and energy and climate grief. Really fascinating chat. And Mike Cannon-Brooks I wish I had the confidence of a man who has $12 billion in the bank, because that's what Mike Cannon-Brooks has. And when he talks about the climate crisis, he's so positive and optimistic and really undercuts the authority of government in this space, because they don't have the ability to make long-term changes for for the climate crisis. So really great conversation that came out today on our podcast, and I'm really thrilled to share it with you. Last week we had Dave Anthony from The Dollop, Francesca Fiorentini from AJ Plus, and we also had the Mooch from the White House. Anthony Scaramucci joined us to talk about the debates, the US debate. Unfortunately, we recorded a day before Donald Trump got COVID, so it was it's less funny now. But it was still a really cool get and a really fantastic chat with Anthony Scaramucci, and it was cool to have Dave and Francesca on as well. So, yeah, no, the pod's going great. So thanks for asking. Join up irrationalfear.com.
Yeah, and the politics and where everything's at right now. Where do you think it's going to land in the States? Like, if you were to take a bet, you look at these things closely. I saw that there's the polls are saying that Trump's going to lose by a lot, but the polls have been wrong. What's your take?
It's so difficult, so interesting to see the polls. Polls are, I don't trust them in America, but one person who does tweet fascinating things is a guy called Kevin Roos. He's the technology editor at the New York Times, and every month he tweets the Cloudflare list of the top 10 articles that have been shared on Facebook. And those articles are predominantly Daily Signal, Breitbart, Fox News, and these are all right-wing publications. And Facebook, basically this right-wing channel of conversation and conspiracy theories. And if the world's biggest platform for information is to be believed, then Donald Trump will just get back in. So that's the scary reality. And I don't know if I can trust all the polls. And 538 had a great graphic came out yesterday saying that Biden's got this landslide on his hands, but it's very hard to tell at this point, and we're only 3 weeks out, and it's very scary. For the first time in my life, I'm quite happy not to be in America. I feel like I've tried to be in America for so many years, and now I'm not an American. It's like the first time we're like, yeah, I'm okay with not being in America.
And finally, I just feel like you've got such interesting insights in this stuff. With everything that's happening with the federal budget in Australia, what's your 30-second take on that? Because it seems like there is a bunch of positive things to come out of it, but I guess you scratch at the surface and look a little bit deeper. What's sort of the thing that people aren't talking about, do you think?
Look, the only thing I'm really interested in the budget is talking about climate action, and there was nothing about climate action. Ketan Joshi did this great tweet during the budget. He said, "I did a control F on Josh Frydenberg's speech for the word climate, and it appeared once right before a sentence where they were going to unlock five new gas basins." So when you're talking about this government, and the government isn't interested in climate action, they're interested in exploiting resources, which is fine, but also those resources come with emissions, and some of those emissions are incredibly bad. And gas emissions are the worst kind of emissions, because they are 86 times hotter than carbon emissions. So we have a serious problem in this government, where they are taking money away from renewables because supposedly they've done their job and they can stand on their own 2 feet, and they're investing significant amount in things like gas and coal and oil. And that's understandable when we're the largest exporter of that. But at the same time, if we are to meet any kind of emissions reduction in the next 50 years, that is not what we should be doing. We should be curbing our emissions. We should be keeping that stuff in the ground, and we should be moving rapidly to low emissions technology. And there's nothing in the budget for that.
And so if we were to change federal, governments, I just feel like there's so much that needs to be undone. How do you go about doing something like that? If they're putting together these sort of strategies, how do you actually create change?
Well, I feel like for us in Australia right now, government is one part of the equation, and part of that is looking at independence to lead on climate. So currently we've got a huge crossbench who all believe in climate action, and they believe in a lot of other things as well, but climate action is the thing that crossbench is really focused on. And the Morrison government's only a couple of seats, only have a couple of seats majority in the lower house. So when we go to the polls next year, really look out for candidates in your area who do support climate action and get behind one or two that do. And Labor are making noise about climate action, but they and they have in the past, you know, put in ETS and things like that, which is great. But they are currently beholden to the right wing of their party, who are all for fossil fuel extraction and exportation. So we've got this problem where Labor, we've got this problem where the two major parties are completely beholden to the fossil fuel industry. And if any of these two major parties decide to go against the fossil fuel industry, they push their lobby into action and they will basically force the leader of that party out, which is what they've done time and time again since Bob Hawke. So it's a pretty scary position to be in. The safest bet for us for climate action is to vote independents in the lower house who can force the government, to wedge the government in a place of climate action. So that's that picture there. The other things that folks can do is move their super to a superannuation fund that is invested solely in renewable energy or non-fossil fuel products. And I'm in the process of kind of doing some research about that now and doing that. You can also do something simple. You know, lead every day yourself. You can offset the carbon emissions with your car. If you go to the Irrational Fear website, you can check out the Go Neutral link there. And
I did see the sticker that you put on the back of your car.
Yeah, yeah. The team behind Go Neutral will take your $90 and buy 3.5 tons of carbon offsets for your car so you can offset your emissions in your car for the year. And that's kind of what it's scale. They're just starting it now, but at scale, what would be great is you could tick a box at the RTA or Service New South Wales or Victoria Roads company. What do you guys call your Victorian Roads company?
Roads. Yeah. You got it.
Victoria Roads.
Victoria Roads. And it'd be great if you could just tick a box and, you know, pay another $90 and have your car completely offset for the year. I mean, that would be a great thing to do. So you can take your own personal leadership in that regard. Mm-hmm. But the big thing that needs to change is big systemic change around energy, and we really need to push for renewables. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so much of it's just education too, because there's so, I feel like I get into the fun, sexy stuff, which is looking at the trolling of Donald Trump and things like that, but you don't look at your actual backyard and see what's going on. So Irrational Fear, I feel like, is that good version of being entertained and also learning about what's actually happening.
So, yeah, and the show's really good, and I think it has more jokes than what I was putting in before. So
I appreciate just getting the information. Awesome. Thanks, Dan. It's a Screenplay Sunday next week, a new script, which will be done by me. I think I have to do it, GB. I have to at least have a crack, and maybe I'll give myself a line as well, and I'll make sure all the words can be said at a grade two level.
Okay, great.
Great. Right. Have a good Sunday, and we'll see you tomorrow, guys. Actually, we won't see you tomorrow. We'll see you next week.
Next. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.